You're listening to the Liberty Grace Church Sermon Podcast. For more information, visit libertygrace.ca.
If you go for an eye exam, you kind of know what to expect. You're going to wait, and then you're going to go up there, and then they're going to do all these things. The first thing that happens is not the eye doctor, but somebody else, usually the person at the front, takes you and does all these pretests. And then you go in and you know what to expect. Is this clear or is this clear? And I always want to go, I don't know. And it always feels like they're tricking you, right? It's like, I always think they know the answer and they're just waiting to trip me up. Am I the only one who feels like that when you go to the eye doctor? Like, am I answering right? I almost want to apologize when I answer. And yet, I think this one's barely, can I see it again? And this is a bit of a plug for CNBC. That's what I expect from an eye appointment. When you go to CNBC, which is just over here, Ritesh Patel, who is a member of this community, they do stuff that I've never seen any eye doctor do. Has anybody been there before? You know what I'm talking about? I mean, they take this image of your eye, and then they put it on the screen, and you're looking at it, and I have no idea. It feels like you're in outer space looking at a planet. It's so beautiful. And you're like, that's my eye. And then they show you, he's looking at the screen, and he's like, oh, that's not good. What do you mean? It looks beautiful. No, look. And at the very back of my eye, there is a small bit of scarring. Now, no eye doctor that I've been to has ever noticed that before, but he looks at this and he says, that's not good. And that's not what you want to hear your eye doctor say. And he says, okay, now it's good you came in because your eyeglasses haven't changed, your prescriptions. You know, Daryl, you're going downhill, like, let's face it, but it's okay. And he didn't quite say it that way. But anyway, he says, we need to check this out because that happens at the back of your eye for a reason. That's usually an indication of, it could just be that you had an incident, maybe you banged your head and something happened, but it could be an indication of diabetes or something else. And so I went. I had all these tests. It was a big pain in the neck because I thought I was going in for an eye exam, and that led to two doctor's appointments and all this other stuff. And then going back to him again, and everything was clear. But all of this to say is, there is the presenting issue, and then there's the deeper issue. There is the stuff that you think that you're going to cover, and then underneath that is some stuff that you didn't even think was connected. Who thought that going to the eye doctor, he would say, hey, like, I'm worried maybe you have diabetes. I want to say, like, hey, you're the eye doctor. Like, leave that for the doctor over there. And yet, I was really glad that in the end that he did that. And in today's passage, we're looking at money. You might think that the Apostle Paul is just talking about money, but actually it goes a whole lot deeper than that. The thing is, we think that, Paul talks about money, we think that the pastor gets up and preaches about money, you think it's all about the offering, you think it's all about, oh no, like, the church needs money or something like that. But what Apostle Paul says in this passage is that it actually touches a very deep part of us. And we looked at this a little bit last week, but I want to quote somebody I quote often, Tim Keller. He says this: some people want lots of money as a way to control their world and their life. Such people usually don't spend much money and they live very modestly. They keep it all safely saved and invested so they can feel completely secure in the world. Others want money for access to social circles and to make themselves beautiful and attractive. These people do spend money on themselves in lavish ways. Other people want money because it gives them power over others. He says, in each case, money functions as an idol. And yet, because of various deep idols, it results in very different patterns of behavior. And what he's saying is, we're going to talk about money again, because, and then we're going to move on, Next week, Byron Wright is our guest speaker. Byron's a missionary we support in Chad, Africa. Then we're coming up to Easter, and so there's a little bit break. And Paul ends money here, but what I want to say is money is very complicated. Okay, so money touches us at a very deep level. There's all sorts of things going on as we talk about money, and there's all kinds of things that are going to go on as we look at this passage today. And so I want to just flag that this isn't just a passage about one thing. What we talk about is going to be symptomatic of a deeper issue, and how we respond to this is going to be symptomatic, or actually it's going to touch the deeper issues that we need to confront in our lives. So in this passage, what Paul does is, a bit of background, last week he's talking, he's saying to the Corinthians, okay, you and I are okay now, right? They're like, yeah, we're okay, everything's forgiven, everything's worked out. He's like, okay, good, let's talk about money. And last week we looked at this weird thing that Paul's saying, the first thing that went off track when their relationship was bad was money. And the first thing to get back on track again is money. Side note, we looked at this last week. The first indication that your heart is being rewired towards God is how you use money. And the first indication that your heart is getting off track from God is money. I quoted our friend Peter Blundell from St. John's Church up in Richmond Hill. And he said, here's how I know that somebody's really getting dialed into the church. They start giving. Here's how I know, once before anything comes up, that they're on their way out, they stop giving. Because giving, as we looked at, is an indication of a deeper issue. And so Paul says, okay, now we're straight. We need to get this giving straight. Full disclosure, this is not really about giving to the offering. This is about the wider application of generosity. They did that within the Corinthian church. That's not what Paul is talking about. We could talk about that separately. There's lots in the Bible about it. What we're going to look at today applies to that, and yet it's much broader. It was actually given to the Judean church that was impoverished. And right away, just this is a little bit extra. Giving is not just one thing. So it's not like once you give in the offering plate, it's like, whew, done. Paul assumes that they're going to be giving. He talks about them in the first book. He assumes that that's going to be taking place. And yet he also assumes that there's going to be generosity to other Christians in financial need, and that's what he's talking about here. And in this passage, what Paul does is he's going to give us two guidelines for giving. Because you and I are wondering, how much do we need to give? I hear that all the time. How much should I give? And then he's going to end with two benefits to giving. So very simple today. This is going to be the most complicated message. It's going to be, it's a profound message, I think, the message of it is. But it's not a complicated, hard-to-understand message. Here is the two guidelines for giving. Whenever somebody says, how much should I give? Here are the two guidelines that he gives in this passage. Last week we looked at, in a previous chapter, the guidelines for giving, that it should be proportional and willing. And in this passage he says a very similar thing. Here's the first thing he says in verse 6, give generously. In verse 6 he says this, the point is whoever spares sowingly, or sparingly, sorry, will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So picture a farmer, right? Farmer sowing seed. Is it wise for a farmer to say, I really need to save on seed? And so I'm going to be very sparing in how I sow seed, and I'm going to hope for a great harvest. It makes no sense. And so Paul takes this image and he says, look, a smart farmer understands that they're going to reap 30 to 100 times more than they sow. A seed that actually goes in the ground and blossoms, there's going to be a 30 to 100 time return on that. And so a smart farmer sows with open hands, indiscriminately giving as much as they can to the seed on the ground. And so Paul says, the point is this, he says, That's how we should approach giving too. Now I want you to pause and think, isn't that a very different way of how we think of giving money to the Lord? You and I don't think that, you know, we think it's actually smart to be somewhat sparing in our giving to the Lord. And Paul says, you're being about as smart as the farmer who's like, here's a seed. You know, here's a seed. And Paul's contrasting two types of people. And the one sort of person is giving generously. And the other kind of person is giving very sparingly. And Paul's saying, which one of these two is smarter? Paul's saying, the one who gives generously, open-handedly, is being way smarter. Because they can expect to reap. And Paul goes on, Paul says, that is an image of how we should give. So that's the first, and we're going to keep looking at this. This principle is going to keep going on in this passage. How much should you give? The guideline is give generously. I love what C.S. Lewis said, because somebody said to him, how much should I give? And he said, well, you know that you should give. The amount that you should give is basically when it starts to hurt, when it starts to actually pinch you, when it starts to feel like it's influencing how much you're living on, you're probably starting to give the right amount. And what C.S. Lewis was saying is, here's how you know you're not giving enough. If your lifestyle, if it really doesn't affect your lifestyle, if you're giving, kind of makes sense. And so our financial advisor comes out, and she's not a believer. She looks at what we give. And it's always interesting because she always has, at the end of the thing, like, you know, what advice do you have? And for years now, she stopped now because we've had her for like 20 years. But she would say, you know, the one thing you could do differently is you're giving way too much to the church. And every time I hear that from her, I'm like, good. Because if the amount that we're giving to the church makes sense to you as my financial advisor who doesn't love the Lord, we're not giving enough. If you look at us and say, what in the world are you doing? With the income you have, that is seriously beginning to impede your lifestyle. And according to C.S. Lewis, that's an indication that we're just beginning to give enough. And so that's the first principle, give generously. The other principle is this. And, oh, by the way, a lot of us are wondering, how in the world do I do this? And, Shar, I don't know if you can put on the next diagram. I love this picture. It's from a church. It's from C4 Church. I always get C3 Church and C4 Church mixed up. It's like every church in Toronto is named Grace, Liberty Grace, Grace Toronto, Grace Fellowship, you know. And every church seems like C4, C3. We should start like a C5 church. This would be like, or even better, we're C5. But I love this picture because they have an image. They have this image to try to help their people understand how to give more generously. And they say all of us are along the line here somewhere. So a lot of us maybe are just beginning givers. And you're hearing what I'm saying, you know, and you're like, I have no way to give generously. I am in over my head. I have no spare income. I am running a deficit. I am in debt. And what they say is, okay, yes, you can't overnight become an extravagant giver. But what's the next step you can take towards generosity? You know, maybe you can't get there overnight, but maybe you could set a 5-year or a 10-year plan to move towards being an extravagant giver. You know, maybe right now you're just an emerging giver, and you can become engaged. Maybe you're engaged, but you can expand. Maybe you're at the point where you can afford to give more, and you can become an extravagant giver. Whatever it is, take the next step. You know, what it looks for you to give generously is going to look differently, but it doesn't make sense to give sparingly, Paul says. Give generously. Now, the other guideline he gives is this in verse 7. And this is going to counterbalance what I've just told you. And this is what we're going to look at in this tension here. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart. How much should you give? Well, Paul says, give generously, but each person must give what he has decided in his heart. And then Paul says there's two things that govern this, okay? So number one is this, not reluctantly. not reluctantly. And so when you're given, there shouldn't be a sense of like, oh, like, I don't want to do this. Not reluctantly. And secondly, not under compulsion. There should be no guilt. There should be no pressure. There should be nobody, you know, it shouldn't be a case of, I would give less, except that somebody's pressuring me to give. I think of the church, a friend of mine, pastor, was saying, he said, okay, everybody take out their wallet, hold it up. You know, right away, you know, this isn't going in a good direction, right? And then he's like, okay, everybody pass their wallet or purse to the left. Okay, now the person, open up their wallet and take everything out and put it on the offering plate and then pass the wallet back. I think Paul would say, don't give that way. You know, don't give because you're motivated by sad feelings or external pressure. And Shar, if you could put up the next slide, this is really the Venn diagram of how much to give. If you're giving generously, but not willingly, you're not giving right. If you give cheerfully, but you're not giving generously, you know, if you're cheerfully giving a dollar and you're making a good income, that doesn't, it's like, that is, you might be giving cheerfully. That's, for some, I'm saying that that's not a sacrificial amount for you. If you're giving a small amount, but you're not giving, generously, but you're giving joyfully, that's not enough. Paul says to aim in the middle where those two intersect. What is the amount that I can give both generously and cheerfully? And Paul quotes the principle in Deuteronomy 15 that says this, you shall give to him freely. This is in the Old Testament law. And your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him. Because for this the Lord your God will bless you in all your work, in all that you undertake. And Paul rephrases this principle and says, give to him freely, and your heart will not be grudging when you give to him, because the Lord will bless you in your work. And Paul says basically, God loves a cheerful giver. Listen, when we reach this, I really believe that a lot of us are missing out because we've never actually given in that circle, that middle part of generous, joyful giving. And I'm here to tell you, when you get to that point, it is an adventure. When you hit the middle there, Randy Alcorn says this, I have found that cheerful givers love God and love him more deeply each time they give. He says, to me, one of the few experiences comparable to the joy of leading somebody to Christ is the joy of making wise and generous choices with my money and possessions. Both are supreme acts of worship. Both are exhilarating. Both are what we were made for. Now I want you to hear that. Randy Alcorn is saying, when you hit that middle circle, it is about as big a buzz as leading somebody to Jesus. Like, there is a joy involved with that that is amazing. And so, I don't know what you need to do to get there, but that's where Paul is saying to aim for. Aim to be both generous and cheerful in your giving. Okay, for the rest of this passage, though, what Paul's doing is he's going to tell us what happens when we give this way. And I'm going to just give you this, and then we're going to wrap up. There's one more thing to look at, and then we'll be done, and we'll take some questions. What happens when we give this way? And this is very important for us to realize. There's two benefits. Here's the first benefit. God will give you what you need to continue to be generous. God will give you what you need to continue to be generous. And this is going to be so uncomfortable for some of us that I actually want to read this, because this is going to stretch us a little bit, and I know it's going to stretch me. So has anybody ever heard this teaching that, you know, if you sow some money, if you sow some giving, that God will allow you to reap? And if you give, God will give you back more. Has anybody heard this? And, you know, you've seen this abused, and yet there's a valid scriptural principle here. And we're going to look at this, because it's going to make us a little bit uncomfortable. In verse 6, we've already seen it. that if we sow sparingly, we will reap sparingly. So, question, is it possible that some of our financial difficulties are due to the fact that we've been sowing sparingly, and God isn't trusting us with more because we haven't been faithful with what he's given to us? Biblical principle, right? To those who are faithful with little, I will give more. Are you uncomfortable yet? Okay, this is going to get worse. Verses 8 to 11, if you're uncomfortable already. God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work. And what Paul says here is, look, I mean, he's using kind of code language. God is not stingy when it comes to grace. As D.A. Carson says, God is no one's debtor. He bestows all kinds of heart gifts on people who give. God is able to lavish grace on you. So the more you give, God is able to lavish more and more grace on you. And the illustration I heard years ago that's always stuck with me is the kid whose father buys him fries at McDonald's. I mean, every kid has been there. And the dad, you know, buys this kid fries. And, of course, what does every dad do when a dad buys his kid fries? He goes in there for a fry, right? And the kid freaks out. Dad, those are my fries. And the dad's like, do you know who bought you those fries? Do you know who gave you those fries? Do you know who could walk up to that counter and pull out his wallet and shower you with so many fries that it would actually make you sick? Isn't that a bit of a picture with God? I mean, God gives us everything. And when we're asked to be generous, we're like, God, no, stop. And God's like, do you know who gave you everything you have? Do you know who could literally open the floodgates and give you so much? Like, I am not lacking. I could give you more and more. Why do you believe that you need to hold on in a stingy way the rest of the time? Okay, so if this is making you uncomfortable, take another look at this passage. Because what this is not saying is, if you want to be rich, the way to get rich is to give, right? To sow $1,000 and you'll make $1,000,000. I think that's actually twisting this passage. Because look at what verse 10 says. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed. For what? For sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. And it gets even more, Paul gets clear. Verse 11 says, you will be enriched in every way to be what? Loaded? No, what does it say? You will be enriched in every way to be generous. Nobody's saying it. It's like you're all looking at me like. Paul says, yes, God will give you more. You know why he will give you more? It's so that you can give more. And it becomes this circle of generosity. You will be enriched to be generous. And so does the Bible teach that if you're stingy with your giving, that God won't entrust you with much? It actually seems to. Does the Bible teach that if we are faithful with what God gives us financially, and we're generous, we are just generous with other people, does the Bible teach that God will entrust us with more so that we continue to give more? Actually, the Bible does teach this principle. Not so that we can become rich. Actually, the very opposite, so that we can learn to be lavish givers. That we can, this cycle continues, right? We keep earning more so we can give more. And then the more we get, the more we give, the more our hearts overflow with generosity. And so that's the first benefit. That's what happens when we give. God will give you more so that you can be even more generous. That's a principle. I think that when I've looked around, I've seen this play out, actually. I could give you a couple examples because if I'm looking at the time, I won't. But I've seen generous churches and generous people, the more that they give, the more God just seems to give them. And then the more they get, they're like, yeah, I guess God gave me more so I can be even more generous. And they keep giving and giving and giving. The people that receive and just keep it themselves, it seems so often God just seems to say, okay, I'm not giving you any more. But here's the second thing that happens when we're generous. God will use your gifts to bless others. And let's finish with this in verses 12 to 15. He says, it will supply the needs of the saints. Verse 12 says, the ministry of the service is not only supplying the needs of the saints. It is, you know, when we give, the poor are fed. When we give, churches are planted. When we give, missionaries are supported. When we give, the gospel is advanced. When we give wisely and sacrificially, it supplies the needs of the saints. But Paul goes on in verse 12 and says, but here's the second thing. Not only will we be meeting the needs of the saints, but it is also overflowing in many thanksgivings to God. By their approval of the service, the people who receive it, they will glorify God because of your submission that comes from your confession of the gospel of Christ and the generosity of your contribution for them and all the others. I think I've told you before about going to the post office. My personal account was overdrawn. The church account was at zero. We had bills to pay. And that day I wrote out a check for the offering, knowing that I didn't have money. My account was overdrawn. The church needed money, so I was like, man, like the church needs money, I need money. I went to a big donor, they couldn't give me money. They turned me down flat. And then on the way home, I went to Shoppers Drug Mart, where P.O. Box used to be, and opened up the P.O. Box. And there was a check from a church that I didn't even know was giving us any money, and there was a check for $10,000. And I think I told you, if you've been here, bawling in the Shoppers Drug Mart, you know, people are looking at me like, what's going on? And exactly what was going on in that moment was what Paul describes here. That I was overflowing in many thanksgivings to God. That's exactly what was going on here. Because of their gift, Liberty Grace at that point was able to go on. And by our approval of their generosity, my approval, I glorified God because of their submission that came from the gospel, their submission to the gospel of Christ. And I phoned up the pastor, and I said, thank you. And he said, like, don't thank me. He's like, there's a lady that goes to our church in Pembroke, Ontario. And she used to live at King and Dufferin. And when we announced that we were doing this, she stood up, this little old lady who hardly says anything. She stood up and she says, we need to give to this church. I used to live right at King and Dufferin, right around the corner. We need to give. We need to dig down deep and give to the church. When we give generously, it causes others to thank God and give glory to Him. Next week, Byron Bright is here, by the way. This is not on my notes, but I was thinking about it all week. Byron is our missionary. Wouldn't it be cool? We give him a small amount every week. Wouldn't it be cool above and beyond our offerings? And so I guess I'm kind of announcing that we're doing this. Wouldn't it be cool, not in a way that you won't get a tax receipt for this, but wouldn't it be cool next week to give them a love gift, to take up separate from our offering, just like, Byron, we love you. We are so committed to your ministry. We'll become a generous church to you. And so next week, I hope we can bless Byron by giving a little bit extra. I don't know what it is. Pray about it and just encourage them. Okay, so final thing, verse 14 is this. While they long for you and pray for you because of the surpassing grace of God upon you. Paul says that the people who receive this gift, the Judean believers, it will bring them closer to you. It will bring you closer to others. You know, that's what I'm talking about with Byron. How do we become closer to Byron? Paul says here, as we give more generously to Byron, as we give more generously to other churches, as we become a generous church and give more freely to other churches, it will bring us closer to them. Friends, this is what happens when we give. God seems to bless those who give generously so they can give even more. And not only that, it supplies the needs of our saints, of other saints. It makes them rejoice, and it brings them closer to us. Again, to quote Randy Alcorn, individuals, families, and churches can establish beachheads of strategic lifestyle, disciplined spending, and generous, globally minded giving. By infectious example, we can claim more territory for Christ than we ever dreamed possible. A revival of lavish giving and strategic living is a revival of grace empowered by God. As the body of Christ gets serious about learning and living out God's instructions concerning money and possessions, Christ's cause will be furthered and his person exalted. Why am I saying this? You know, it's two reasons. It's in the Bible. And I love that we're preaching through 2 Corinthians. Because my mother, as she said on the phone to me last week, she sat on my preaching for a year. She's like, Bill, you never preach on giving. We need this. And I'm preaching it because it's here. It's just like next week's topic. But I'm also preaching it because this is what I want from you. And this is what I want for us as well. Friends, I dream of the day when we can go to every church that supports us and say, we no longer need your money. Living Hope is here. I long for the day that I go to Living Hope. And I say to Living Hope, please stop sending us money. You've been so generous. We are now self-supporting. Friends, I long for the day when I turn to you and I say, we need to give more. We need to become a generous church that is giving larger and larger amounts of money away to other churches. Not keeping it for ourselves, but giving more and more money away to other churches so that our impact around the world and in Toronto can be multiplied. Friends, I long to be like Don Brubaker, who came. You remember Don Brubaker came to our church one time? Miriam remembers. We're going to get him to preach. I'm going up there in a couple weeks. He went up there to a little tiny church in the country. And he's like, they said, we can pay you part-time. He's like, great. And the church grew, and they came to him, they said, we can now pay you full-time. He said, nope. But I've got an idea. I know what we can do with that extra money. I won't take the extra money, but Liberty Grace needs more of that money. And he named, there's about three or four other churches where he said, even though I have every right to expect a full-time salary, why don't we use that money? Friends, that's what I long for us, that we would scheme of ways to give away more and more money. Let's look at just one last thing. This is it. Verse 15 says this. It's kind of odd way to end. Thanks be to God for his inexpressible gift. I think one day when I get to heaven, I'm going to shake Paul. I guess I'll shake his hand first. But then I'll be like, Paul, what did you mean here? And there's a whole bunch of passages where, could you be clear, please, in what you're talking about? What does Paul mean, thanks be to God for his inexpressible gift? I'm not totally sure, but I think he's talking about two things. First, he's saying, look, when you get this, I want to thank God for the inexpressible gift of his grace that makes generous Christians. And that is a gift from God. When Christians become generous, that is a gift from God. Praise be to God for his inexpressible gift that turns stingy people into generous people. But I think he could be referring beyond that to Jesus. That Jesus is the one who lived this way. And Jesus transforms us by his grace and by his example. From stingy people, when we see the grace of Jesus, how generous he is, Paul says, thanks be to God for this inexpressible gift that transforms people like us through the death of Jesus Christ into generous people who can change the world. If you have Jesus, you don't need anything more to start. Hudson Taylor was a great missionary to China, and when he applied for the China Inland Mission, the application form asked for his assets. And Hudson Taylor wrote on the application form the sum of his assets, £10 and all the promises of God. How much do you have? Today, as we pray, we can list all of our assets and say, no matter how big or how few they are, we have that and the promises of God, and that's all we need to be generous. And so, Lord, this is such a crucial topic, Lord. This goes so deep so close to our hearts. And Lord, in a place like Liberty Village, the irony is we have at the same time so much. We're among the richest in the world. When you look at the income, when you look at the privileges we enjoy, Lord, as I read in an article a few years ago, we live better lives than Rockefeller did. Even middle-class people, we live better lives than Rockefeller. We eat better, we have better health care, we have better accommodations. And yet, Lord, the reality is many of us are struggling financially. We carry a weight of debt. We feel poor. Many of us are poor. And Lord, I pray for your grace in this area. Lord, I pray for those who are struggling financially. Lord, would you help them to get out of debt? Lord, I pray for those who are jobless. Father, would you provide the job that they need so that they could live without having to worry? Lord, for those of us who are carrying the weight of financial anxiety right now, Lord, you care about that. I pray you would provide. But Father, I pray for those of us who are wrestling with a heart of stinginess. For those of us who haven't discovered the joy of generosity, Lord, would you free us to be generous? I pray that this would result in a harvest. I pray that the more we give, the more you would give us to give. I pray that this would result in your work being extended both here and around the world. And Lord, I want to pray lastly that you would make us a generous church. Father, I pray that Liberty Grace as a whole would model what we've talked about. Lord, that we would become increasingly generous and give more and more of our money away. Lord, I want to pray particularly that you would enable us a church that gives 10% of our income away. Lord, would this be for your glory? We pray this in Jesus' name.